Welcome to Education, Technology, Society, a podcast about education in the digital age.
Welcome to Education, Technology, Society, a podcast about education in the digital age.
Hello, and welcome back to Education, Technology, and Society, a podcast about all things edtech, digital education with a critical slant. My name's Neil Selwyn from Monash University in Melbourne, Australia. And today we're talking with Dr. Lulu Shi from the University of Oxford's Department of Education. Lulu's just taken up a new position there as a lecturer in EdTech. And one of the most exciting things about Lulu is that she's relatively new to education. Lulu, by training, is a sociologist. She's got a background in media and communications and previously worked at Oxford's Internet Institute on projects on the transformation of paid and unpaid work in the age of AI and robotics. So it's really good that a researcher like this is bringing a perspective onto education and the digital. And I wanted to talk to Lulu about a couple of projects that she's just started, looking at the role of edtech firms in shaping education contexts, and a new project just funded by the British Education Research Association on the political and economic agendas behind the push for digitalisation in UK education. So it's a really interesting conversation, and it was really good to get an early insight into this really important research. I hope you enjoy.
If we want to understand what are the consequences of digital education, we kind of need to understand who are the actors involved and what are the interests, because that kind of shapes the design of education technology, also how it is used and how it's regulated. So I guess I'm interested in kind of first understanding who are the actors and then what are the agendas behind?
Which sound like really simple questions, but they're actually very difficult to address. I mean, if we start off with the kind of corporation, the commercial ed tech firms, I mean, what ed tech firms are you looking at? We've got the big tech corporations, international ed tech giants, but also some really small firms, I guess. I mean, how are you making sense of the marketplace? Who are you actually finding?
So this is actually partially based on a current project that I'm doing, in which I'm building an index that tries to measure the usage of education technology. That is to understand how much edtech is being used and also what kind of edtech is being used. And I also differentiate between which edtech products, and looking at the data that I scrape from online to understand the usage, you can see that there is a winner-take-all phenomena. So you do tend to see the big players, the big edtech companies who are really scooping up the marketplace, having the majority of the users. And then the number of users per product is decreasing very, very rapidly. And I guess this is not a coincidence, because this is something that you can see across the entire tech sectors. And this is also the case in education, right? And this has, of course, to do with how things are funded. I guess it's also important to understand, like, who are the funders. Venture capitalists are involved, right? And they, of course, want to finance products that have this potential to scale up.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you're getting a sense of the kind of commercial actors by scraping the data. But you're also interested in policymakers as well, which is fascinating. I mean, edtech has bounced a lot around. I mean, even say the UK government, for example. I can remember when trade and industry was the department that looked after edtech. Then it was science. Then it was culture. So there's a whole bunch of different kind of policymakers there. Then you've got lobbyists, and then you've got kind of international actors like the EU and the OECD. So, I mean, how are you making sense of the policy community? How are you making sense of the policy community, you know, around edtech?
Again, it's a very big and complex field. There are so many actors involved, but the approach is to use network ethnography. So first identifying some of the major actors and then go from there and discover who are other major players in this field. And this project is located in the UK. So looking at the UK government, education department, and so on. And for example, one of the pieces I'm currently looking at is the digital strategy, the UK digital strategy for the years 2022 to 2025. And that already reveals a lot. And that reveals kind of the narrative of the official government. But then, of course, as you have touched upon, there are other players such as influential think tanks, consultancies, lobbies, who are not necessarily involved in education as such, but maybe in the broader tech field, right? And currently, you can see that the group Effective Altruists are becoming more prominent in the UK. And these people tend to have, so there's a great overlap of effective altruists people and Silicon Valley people. And they work in big tech companies such as DeepMind, OpenAI, Microsoft, and so on. And their main worry about using AI is this existential risk. And that has been picked up by the UK government. And they have appointed people in this movement, Effective Altruism. They appointed these people to be on board to advise the UK government on digital strategies.
So that's super interesting. So you've got this kind of ideology, these values from Silicon Valley filtering down to the UK government. How is that kind of manifest in the education digital strategies then? Because this is a really interesting kind of shift away from how digital education would have been thought about even 5 years ago. So how is effective altruism kind of seeping into the way that the UK government are approaching digital education?
Yeah, I guess the digital education cannot be entirely separated from how we approach tech as such, right? If the main questions that we want to tackle in tech is the sort of existential risk rather than algorithm bias or privacy issues, ethical issues, then that is also very much reflected in education technology discourse, right? That also here we think about maybe these kind of very big, far away, intangible, maybe to some degree not real questions. And not think about, oh, what actually happens to already marginalized people using these technologies. So it's really kind of taking the attention away to a very different direction, also in education technology discourses.
So, I mean, this is a fascinating aspect of your research because you're looking at the political agendas and the ideological agendas behind the kind of edtech marketplace. You still hear people claim that edtech is apolitical. I mean, what else are you finding in terms of the politics of edtech?
That's a funny claim to some degree. I guess tech is actually through and through political, right? So maybe also related to your last question, which policy actors I'm looking into, that also includes big international organizations such as OECD, UNESCO, World Bank. And I think it's quite interesting to look at what are their sort of values, what are their ideologies. So just taking UNESCO, OECD, and World Bank maybe as examples, all three engage in education, but they have very different origin stories. So they all developed after the Second World War, but UNESCO has a very much human right-driven kind of value ideologies, whereas OECD and World Bank, they have been described as a vehicle for the U.S. foreign policy. So they have a very different approach to education, and they also much more emphasize the output of education, the human capital value of education. And now their differences is also very much reflected in their approach to digital education. I think only very recently the OECD, who is the producer of PISA, they asked ChatGPT to do the PISA questions.
Right.
And they found that ChatGPT was doing better than the average student. And I think one of their takeaway was, we got to change teaching. We got to change education system because of that. But maybe it's actually reflecting more about the way of testing might be a problem, because how things are tested these days, especially the OECD, is very much standardized, right? And this is something that ChatGPT is extremely good in.
OECD has a multi-billion dollar industry doing standardized testing, so they probably don't want to kind of question that too much. I mean, you're uncovering some super interesting things. I'm also interested in you looking at the economic agendas as well. I mean, from the outside, it looks obvious. Firms are in ed tech to make money. Policymakers want to kind of address work skills and boost the IT set. Presumably, you're finding a bit more nuanced things than that. It's not just about profit making and jobs, is it?
So I would say the political agenda and the economic agenda is really difficult to disentangle those both. For example, Duolingo, of course, are interested in making economic gains. But the approach of that is not necessarily super obvious that they are just after money making. So their main strategy, just from observing what they're doing, is they're trying to establish themselves as the authority for language certification or certificates. So I guess everyone knows about the English test, TOEFL, IELTS, and so on. And now we also have Duolingo test.
Right.
And this is actually being used by major universities across the world, including UK and US and Australia. And that, I guess, could be seen as a political move to some degree, right? Mm. So what I want to say with this is that there's so many ways to make money. And I think it's really important to look into what are the ways to make money. It's not just through selling products directly to the consumers. It may be through these political means. It can also be through collecting data. It can be through digitalizing or commodifying the private aspect or privatizing the public sphere. So there are many different ways. And these different ways is something that I'm very much interested in.
Now, just a couple of final questions. You've come to education from other areas of technology study, other areas of critical technology study. What do you make of the field and of scholarship around ed tech?
Yeah, I think actually these days the field is developing in quite a good or useful direction. For example, so I'm very much interested in looking at the power relations. So that's something that I think maybe hasn't always been the case, but I think it's much more picked up these days, or drawing on SES studies and so on. So I wouldn't say that tech areas in sociology or other tech areas is doing a much better job in terms of, oh yeah, we're doing the right thing. I guess also more and more it can be very useful to work in an interdisciplinary group. And because of the different types of data that we have, we need to use different methodologies. Yeah, that was a little bit of a ramble.
No, that's good. We're stronger together. So, I mean, what are the questions coming again from sociology from the outside? What are the questions that really need to be asked about ed tech?
Well, I think there's so many questions that we need to ask. I guess I'm repeating myself a little bit, but looking at the power relations, that's something I find very important. And I'm just submitted a funding proposal to look at automated decision making in education technology. So I think these kind of areas are gaining on importance, or it's important to understand because automated decision making or coding an algorithm as such is very much invisible to the users or to the vast majority of people, right? And only maybe understandable for a very small group of people who then don't make that transparent. And because these automated decision making are hidden instances in embedded in tools, and we kind of need to understand how things are coded. So I think just thinking about future research, it's quite necessary to understand what are the assumptions that are coded into these products, what are the values that people have. Sure, it's important to understand what are the agendas or hidden agendas, but sometimes it's not even about the agenda. Sometimes it's just about who are these people coding and what are their assumptions, what are their backgrounds, because that's very much shaped by your background, your socioeconomic background, culture values, and so on.
Yeah, and it's fascinating when you think about the logics that are baked into education technologies. Everyone has a view of what education is, the programmers, the developers, the designers, the marketers, because they've been at school themselves or they might be parents. So everyone has a view of what a classroom is or what learning is. So it's something that everybody thinks they're expert on, which you wouldn't necessarily have if you were designing a medical app, for example. So it's fascinating how people actually kind of imagine the classroom, the learning situation when they're building these technologies.
Yeah, absolutely. That's also one of the questions that I ask in this project is, who are these people in tech companies, right? Mm. And very often it's the case that, oh, these edtech companies actually don't hire so many people with pedagogical expertise. These are mainly coders or engineers providing this product for education technology. But as you just mentioned, this is actually a field where there's a lot of expertise around. We would be very terrified if people providing health tech or pharma people don't actually understand medicine.
Yeah, I mean, there's this kind of arrogance or this hubris that, you know, anyone can kind of teach, so therefore we can design the tech. But I mean, it's far more complicated than that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Fascinating. There's so much you could be doing. There's so much you will be doing. It's really, really interesting research. I mean, thanks for taking the time to have a chat. Good luck.
Thank you so much.